Caskey hits this one deep to left field. This has a chance. This ball is gone. It's a walk-off home run.
Now Caleb driving left side. Alley-oop to Nelson. Throws it down with two hands.
Later fake the handoff. Keeps it running left. He's across midfield. 40, 30, 20, 10. Jalen Reiner to the house.
Welcome to the Second to None podcast. The A-State Podcast, presented by First National Bank and Cavanaugh Auto Group. Now, here's Matt Stoltz and Brad Bobo.
Coming up, it's Sunbelt Conference Tournament Week for the basketball teams. We're going to get you ready for a big week ahead in Pensacola. The football schedule's out. We'll go through all the dates and everything coming up for Coach Jones and his team in 2024. Also, a couple of track and field athletes going to nationals this week. They'll be competing in Boston. And a great start to the spring for the men's golf team. We'll talk about that as well. But we're going to start with baseball. The baseball team did drop 2 out of 3 over the weekend at Missouri State. But still, they're off to a great start. Started the season 8-0, second best start in school history. Currently sitting at 9-3, 12 games in. And here to talk about it with us today is a guy who's hitting a team best 469, 5 home runs through the first 12 games of the season. It's Austin Jaslove. How you doing, Austin?
I'm good. Thank you guys for having me. Appreciate it.
We got a lot to talk about, but I'm going to ask you this off the top. Just tell me the truth. Are you surprised with the start? Are you surprised with how well you've started at the plate?
Not necessarily. I'm coming from the SEC, I think I was expecting what I've seen so far. It's pretty good pitching. It's usually around 88 to 93, which I was expecting, but you'll face one of those occasional arms that are pretty good. And we've seen it, and I've just adjusted to it, and all the work that I finally put in kind of come to fruition.
How's life when you can go 2 for 5 and your batting average go down?
It's kind of crazy. I'm not going to lie. People make fun of me for that, actually, every game. Yep, every game.
Well, that's a good problem to have, though. Mm-hmm. Let's get to know you a little bit. You're actually from Knoxville, Tennessee. Tell us about your family and how did you get into baseball?
Yes, sir. So actually, I moved to Knoxville, Tennessee in 7th grade.
Okay.
I'm originally from Southern California, a little place called Temecula.
Yeah. Now, where's that in relation to maybe L.A.?
It's literally right in between San Diego and L.A., right in the middle. And we moved there in 7th grade year. Actually, my dad was like, we got 3 weeks, we're up and leaving, we're going to Knoxville, Tennessee. I was like, what even is that? And we showed up, I went to middle school, played baseball there, went to Christian Academy in Knoxville in high school. Great legendary coach, Tommy Farr, coached me in high school, one of the best coaches I've ever had in my entire life. I couldn't be here without him. Sophomore year, I committed to University of Tennessee. I redshirted my freshman year, played there my sophomore, junior year. And then transferred here this year, and it was one of the best decisions I've ever made. So
you're actually not the first person we've had on this podcast that has moved from Southern California to Knoxville, Tennessee.
That's
JT Schrout, one of our quarterbacks this past season, he was from Southern California, eventually went to Knoxville to play at Tennessee. But was it a job thing? Is that the reason you moved to Knoxville?
It was a job thing, yes, sir. My dad had a, I think it was a regional sales manager job with Aramark Uniforms. And that's the reason we moved to Knoxville, Tennessee.
I would imagine a certain amount of culture shock that goes with that move. What was the biggest adjustment from SoCal to Rocky Top?
Man, well, the driving's different. People drive a lot faster in California. People are a little slower paced in Knoxville, which is nice. And the accents, because we had never really heard that before in California. So it was an interesting change. Grown to like it. So,
were you a surfer?
More of a skimboarder. I wasn't really a surfer. I didn't really get into much of that. I didn't want to get hurt.
What else did you play other than baseball?
Nothing. I actually was not really allowed to play anything else. My dad kind of threw me into baseball and I guess saw something in me or whatever he thought and just made me stick to it. I played flag football for about a year, never did anything else. And I'm the only person to ever play baseball in my family. My father played basketball all the way up until college. So
really? He saw something in you with the game of baseball.
I guess so. He just never threw me in any other sport. And he was like, you're going to stick to this and we're going to work on it every day. And I was like, all right, I'm in it. And went to the field, hit me buckets of ground balls, throw it at me, let me hit. And then from there on, we're just only baseball.
So is there one you felt you missed out on?
I've always wanted to play high school football. That's the one that I regret not being able to play. But at the same time, I could have gotten hurt and never had the opportunity to play college baseball. So I'm always grateful for that, too.
So year-round travel ball then?
Absolutely.
Growing up?
Absolutely.
It's interesting, without, you know, without knowing prior to this conversation, obviously you weren't a Tennessee lifer, then it makes it a little interesting change in that dynamic then from being a kid in Knoxville going to Tennessee. But so even though you weren't born and raised there, I guess it was still a big deal to, as a young high school guy, to be able to commit to stay home.
Yeah, for sure, because all the people around town were like, Knoxville, Tennessee, like, you're going to University of Tennessee, University of Tennessee this, University of Tennessee that. And I was like, yeah, but I didn't really see, like, the big picture of it until I got there, really, because their fan base is kind of incredible. I didn't realize how big it was going to be, especially at the football games and basketball games and all that type of deal. It was actually, like, a bigger deal than I had imagined before.
You won 3 state championships in high school.
Yes, sir, I did. My freshman, sophomore, and junior year. Yes, sir.
All right, so when did you commit to Tennessee?
I committed to Tennessee in October of 2018, my sophomore year of high school.
So you committed early.
Yes, sir.
It's been here in the last 3 or 4 years. You got to Tennessee about the time they really took a big step up, right? Where they really became one of the top programs in the country.
Yes, sir. My first year there, our redshirt year, went to the World Series. My sophomore year, lost in a super regional to Notre Dame, but won the SEC championship. And then last year, we went to the World Series again. So it was a pretty interesting college experience so far, because a lot of people can't say that they've done that. So I'm very blessed for that, too.
It's funny because Matt just said, oh, you committed early. In baseball, not really. I mean, it's an interesting
Well, that's true. You're right.
And as a matter of fact, they've even kind of had to tweak the rules to sort of back that thing up, because people are trying to go commit 8th and 9th graders. So talk through what it was like being recruited at the SEC level as a young guy.
That's funny you say that, because my class was actually the first class where coaches could not call you until you became a junior. So technically you had to call them. So like a travel ball coach would talk to a college coach, and then the college coach would text a travel coach, hey, call so-and-so at this time. They want to talk to you. So it was kind of like the way around coaches trying to reach you. It would be your travel ball coach telling you who to call. It was a very interesting way of doing it, because our class was the first class of doing that. So, I mean, luckily I only had to talk to about 5 or 6 schools before I ended up committing, but it was a very interesting go around for sure.
We've kind of dipped our toe into this conversation in the past with others, but with the travel ball, yes, high school coaches are fantastic. They're going to be able to help you out in many, many ways, but in a lot of cases, these college coaches are dealing with the travel ball coaches. That's where the relationship is.
Absolutely, yeah. My travel coach was actually a good friend of my high school coach, because Tommy Farr was one of the Team USA coaches, the pitching coaches back a while back whenever Mike Trout and Bryce Harper played. And my travel coach was also a college coach at the time, so that's how they ended up meeting together. And that's how I actually got on the travel team that I was put on. They were called the Chattanooga Cyclones, and George Koontz was my head coach. And high school coaches and travel ball coaches do have pretty good relationships usually.
So since you've sort of made it through to this point, now I want to go back and ask, because sometimes it's, I think the risk it gets taken when a kid kind of locks in on one sport is a lot of times that kid will burn out. Mm-hmm. Was there a point that that ever almost happened? Did any stretch in that, did you say, man, I'm tired of baseball?
There was one time I was about, I would say right before I moved to Knoxville, Tennessee, I was about 12 years old, and I had this one coach. He was just, you know, that one coach you just don't like. He was real mean. Everything you do is wrong. And I went home and I'm like, I'm done. I'm not playing baseball anymore. My dad's like, what are you talking about? You're not done. He's like, I'm taking you to the field right now. I was like, nope, I'm not going. Like, I'm sick of it. And he took me to the field, hit me ground balls until I literally couldn't walk anymore. We just kept going all night. And I was like, you know what? No, you're right. Like, I like this. Like, I enjoy it a lot. And I think literally hitting so many ground balls and taking so many at-bats just kind of just grew on me and just never wanted to stop doing it. So
that's interesting.
Yeah.
And I like Dad's approach to it.
Yeah.
You say, I want to quit. He says, let's go play.
Yeah.
And you're going to realize how much you love it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much what happened. It sounds
exactly
like
what happened. Yep.
I kind of do want to go back, and we'll get around to you coming here to Arkansas State. But a big part of your story is those 3 seasons at Tennessee. So when your teammates now ask you about making a couple of trips to the College World Series, what do you tell them?
I told them it was a once-in-a-lifetime experience, because my freshman year I didn't go because I was a redshirt, so I didn't really travel. And then my sophomore year we didn't go to the World Series, so last year was the only year I did go. It was awesome. It was a super cool experience, and it's in the past. I'm trying to get there now with this team. I'm trying to be like a first with Arkansas State. Let's get to the World Series. Let's forget about past 3 years I've been at Tennessee. Let's win it here, because that's the main focus. We're trying to win the Sun Belt Conference tournament and then go on from there. So,
did not being born and raised in Knoxville, Tennessee, take some of the edge off the decision to transfer from the University of Tennessee? Because that can't be an easy call for a kid that's got Knoxville as their hometown to make.
It wasn't really that big of a decision. I prayed a lot. I trusted in God, and he led me to Arkansas State. I think it wasn't really like a big deal. I went into the portal. I told Coach we both left on good terms. It was all good. Some certain things when we get back to talking about how I got at Arkansas State, some things just kind of happened, kind of just like laid out in front of me, and it was just like a, like, here you go. Like, this is your place to go type of deal. So,
all right. So you trusted God in the process, mm-hmm. but what else led you to Arkansas State? How did this unfold?
So actually, I had never had Twitter before. Before I got the portal, and I got it, and I put all my information on there and stuff, and that's how coaches started reaching out. And the second coach that reached out is Henry Lartigue, who's not here anymore, but yeah. He was our old hitting coach. And I was like, yeah, for sure, all this stuff. And then Cross Jumper, who's on the baseball team here, I was at Tennessee with him when he was a freshman. And he texts me, he's like, hey, we need a shortstop, like, we need you to come here. And I was like, oh, okay, for sure. And I was at travel ball and summer ball in the Appalachian League, and I got a call from Raffo, and he wanted me to come for a visit. So I came down for a visit. He prayed over the food. We had great food. I saw the facilities. It was all good. And on the way home, I was like, hey, Dad. I was like, what do you think? He's like, I think we should do it. And I was like, yeah, I think so too. I was like, I don't know what it is about this place, but I think I need to come here. And he was like, yeah, I agree. He's like, just tell him tomorrow. So I called Coach Raffo, and I was like, hey, I'm committing to Arkansas State.
I'm glad you threw in that tidbit that you prayed over the food.
Uh-huh.
I can't imagine meeting Tommy Raffo and not being impressed with the kind of human being he is, number one. But then to see that, what was your first impression after meeting him?
That's crazy you said that, because right when he said, let's pray over this food, me and my dad looked at each other and we were kind of like, okay, like, this is like a really good, like, down to earth, honest man that we could not even just trust on the baseball field. Like, I think I could trust him with my life outside of baseball. I think he would do things for me that a lot of people wouldn't do. It went a very long way because I've never had a recruitment and no one's ever done that. And that went pretty far with us.
Well, that's one of the interesting things you said. The other one I sort of gravitated to is you saw the facilities and it was all good. Because let's just be honest, they're not. I'm not saying anything everybody doesn't know, because getting that ballpark addressed is almost priority one over there right now. So when you spent 3 years in the league you spent in, then to come back and see that, you better really have liked the head coach.
And you know, that's funny because I told my dad, I was like, man, that field is not good. I was like, I don't know if I could play on that field, like, really. And he was like, it doesn't really matter about the field. And I was like, you're right. Like, I played in summer ball leagues that are way worse fields than that. And it really wasn't even the field to me. It was, we have a locker room, we have showers, we have managers, we get all the clothes we need. We got cleats, we got bats, we got gloves, helmets. We got a great training facility with a great trainer, Justin. We got great coaches. And we have everything that Tennessee has. We just don't have all the extra stuff that they have. And you don't really need that extra stuff to have a good baseball team. And I think that's what people get stuck on a little bit. Going to the SEC instead of going to like a smaller school per se, is that they want all that big, grand stuff, but you don't really need it. You don't need it to be successful. And that's what I've come to realize.
You know, kind of take me through the off season. How did you improve your game as soon as you got here? And obviously Coach Raffo is part of that, but I know Coach LeBounty spends a lot of time with you as well. Drew LeBounty, how have those guys been able to help you become a better player?
Yeah, so when I got here, my main focus was pretty much to fix my swing, because I felt I was a little long in my swing at Tennessee. I didn't really think it was going to work if I played every single day. I think I'd have a little bit of too many holes to fix. So me and LeBounty got in the cage, you know, and got after it a little bit. We have this thing called 8 inches. You see 8 inches in, or you see 8 inches out, depending on who's pitching and what the pitches are and all that type of deal. And I think that's helped the team a lot this year so far, because I think it's a new process that they've implemented. And we also do this thing called quabs, a quab chart. It's quality at bat sheet. A base hit's a quality at bat. A sac fly is a quality at bat. 4 pitches after 2 strikes, a quality at bat. And I think that also helps the team, because it takes less pressure off you having to go up there and like look for a certain thing to do. Like, I don't have to go up there and hit a home run or a double every single at bat. Like, you can make this pitcher throw 15 pitches to you and have a quality at bat, then the next guy do the job. I think that's also a thing that's helped this team so far. Those little things they've implemented into this fall, because we did every single scrimmage. We never did an actual game. It was always run, hits, errors column was always a different section. It was always like who had the most bases stolen, who had the most this, who had the most that. And I think that's what helped us kind of take the pressure off of the entire game of baseball. Just do the little things right.
So in this day and age where it sure seems like everybody's hung up on exit velo and launch angle, I mean, kind of how unusual to chart things like quality at bats and getting four pitches after two strikes and those sorts of things.
Yeah, that's a great change, I think. I think we did it at Tennessee as well. A lot of teams are starting to do it and starting to realize like quality at bats are way more important than just looking at the grand scheme of things. Because if you get, it's statistically proven, if you get over 23 quality at bats as a team, I think it's like 75% chance that you win. It's like a co-op race, honestly. Baseball is just a quality at bat race. Whoever gets the most wins and obviously makes less errors. But
yeah, and I know that's one thing that Coach Raffo really preaches is winning free bases. You know, which team wins that battle goes a long way. So talk about this particular team and how you guys have been able to gel to this point. Obviously got off to the great start at 8-0 and still in a really good position right now, 9-3 going into this final week. And obviously, as we record this, you're getting ready for the final non-conference series before Sunbelt play gets here. And being around college baseball, you know that the quality of play is about to go way up with Sunbelt Conference about to arrive. But what do you like about this team?
What I like about this team that I've heard has not been around here years prior is the fight that we have. Because I've been told that we lost Friday and Sunday at Missouri State this weekend. Let's be real. It's all good. It's baseball. We'd lose. On Saturday, we were down by 9. And I think like the fourth inning, they could have kept piling it on. We could have lost by 20 if we wanted to. But we came back and ended up beating them. Apparently seasons before that wouldn't happen. But these guys have fight. And I think the pitching staff's a lot better than it was years prior. And I think that we just have a lot of guys that want to win and want to win and play at the next level so badly that they're just not going to let it happen anymore. I think that they're going to try until they literally can't anymore.
You're wired to be ready for Sunbelt play because the thing it's like the league you came from is that there's not going to be a weekend you can let off the gas pedal once conference play gets here.
Absolutely not. Yeah, Lafayette's going to be a quick turnaround to Sunbelt play because they're a pretty good team. And then I'm pretty sure we have like Texas State and JMU back-to-back weekends as well. It's going to be a dogfight, but we're ready for it.
Look, with the way you're swinging it right now, that's a great way to stay in the lineup, but you've also played several positions through the first 12 games. You've been at short, you've been at third, you've been in right field some, so talk about just trying to find your spot out there.
That's a very interesting question, yeah. So I originally came to be a shortstop, played short, made a few mistakes, but it happens. I wasn't really worried about it. Played third. He wanted me to play third a little bit.
Had you played third before?
I had played third before, but only in summer league. I had never played it in a collegiate game. And then the other day when I started playing right field for the first time, I believe was against maybe Lindenwood. I can't exactly remember. I think it was Lindenwood last weekend. He was like, hey, so-and-so doesn't feel so great. We're going to put them at DH. We're going to have someone else play first, but we want you in the lineup. Can you play right? I was like, I've never played outfield my entire life, not even little league. I was like, but I can do it if you need me to. Like, sure. He was like, all right, yeah, just go out there. He's like, just make sure you catch the ball before it hits the grass. I was like, all right, I will. And then I guess he just wants to try me in different places. And I think he's still trying lineups, if I'm being honest, because it hasn't really been solidified yet. So I think he just kind of wants to figure out who hits the best and what kind of happens.
That's one of the good things about this team is there's just so much depth. And you talk about things that we haven't had in the past. You know, we've had teams where the nine that were out there in the field, that was your nine.
Yeah.
And now you've got options, which is a good thing. And it's good to see some guys still battling for spots.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it makes the team better. Better quality guys you have on the team fighting for spots makes them hungrier. It makes them want to be out there more, and then automatically leads you to more success as a team because the more you try, the better you're going to do. So,
also, through about that second weekend, probably the only team in America whose six-hole guy was hitting 700. tell me to come in here and be one of the newcomers and step right in seeing the ball the way you're seeing it. Kind of talk us through that start you got off to.
It was interesting. Actually, my first at bat, I went up there and struck out looking. My very first at bat as a Red Wolf, and I was like, oh, no, that's not how it's going to start. I was like, this can't be happening right now. I walked back to the dugout. I was like, it's all good. Just relax. And then I went on I think it was like 10 for 14 or something that weekend. And I was like, I didn't even know what happened. I was just seeing the ball and swinging, and I was like, wow. And it was just, once again, goes back to all the things I've done over the offseason, putting in work and finally coming to fruition. So I think it's just all the work you put in eventually pays off.
All right. What's your favorite thing about Jonesboro so far?
Honestly, Jane Towns is pretty good stuff.
It is good stuff.
I like the burgers. The chorizo burger. That's like one of my favorite things over there. I haven't really done much outside of that because it's always just baseball.
Eat and play baseball.
Uh-huh. I only have online classes too, so I'm literally only at the field at all times. So that's it.
That's interesting you say that. So let's detour for a second. Obviously, that's good for a student athlete. Mm-hmm. But like, if it wasn't for that, do you like that? Do you like that setup of never going to a classroom?
I like being like I'm a very outgoing person, I feel like, and I like being around people. And I asked our advisor, can I get put in like one class that's in person? She was like, no, like we don't have any more. Like you need to do only online. I was like, all right. It's kind of grown on me a little bit because I get to just wake up at 9, go get food, go back to sleep for a little bit, wake up, go practice, lift, whatever I want, and then don't have to worry about getting up at a certain time every day, which I think is kind of good for recovery because you're going to play a lot. You need to sleep a lot too, so it kind of helps a little bit that aspect of things.
Brad and I, we didn't have that option back when we were to college.
You had to get this printed magazine thing that had the classes in it and registered. We walked to school uphill both ways.
Oh, yeah. I believe it.
Is your baseball fluent, like major league wise, is that a SoCal influence or who's your major league team?
It is. I'm an Anaheim Angels fan, unfortunately. lost Shohei, as you saw. So that's a heartbreaker. Yeah. And who knows how long we're going to have Trout. Yeah, it's not a very good team, but I'm proud to be an Angels fan still.
He's pretty loyal.
He is. Trout. He is. I think he'll stay for a while. I think he'll stay until he retires, honestly.
Is that your favorite player then?
No. My favorite player is Francisco Lindor. I love him. Yeah, he's great. Swings it from both sides too. I wish I could do that, but I cannot. So,
give us a little fun fact about you. Something.
A fun fact.
Is there something you're into that's outside of baseball?
I love to fish. I go fishing all the time. I actually didn't start hunting until I moved to Knoxville, Tennessee, but I also hunt a little bit too now. Just hunting and fishing. Some country stuff. Knoxville kind of brought it out of me, I guess.
People ever ask if you love jazz?
They do. All the time. Believe it or not, they ask me that all the time. Everywhere new I go, like, you like jazz? I'm like, no, not really. I'm not at all. I don't like it.
Well, we're glad you're here, Austin.
And I appreciate it.
Enjoying the start to the season and looking forward to big things ahead. Looking forward to seeing more big things out of you as well.
Yes, sir. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. For sure.
That's Austin Jazz Love joining us here on the Second to None podcast presented by First National Bank and the Cavanaugh Auto Group. More to come right after this.
Get huge savings now at every Cavanaugh dealership. Cavanaugh has a great selection of late model, low mileage, certified pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. And most are still under factory warranty. We have every make and every model. So you're sure to find the vehicle you want. And when you buy at Cavanaugh, every new and used purchase comes with 1 year of free maintenance. Plus, we buy cars. Bring a vehicle, get a check. Come see us today at one of our dealerships or go to CavanaughCars.com.
This is Coach Brian Hodson, and I'm asking you to help our A-State student-athletes by donating to the Impact Club. This organization helps our program stay competitive and supports our student-athletes by facilitating NIL agreements that allow them to endorse local charities. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access. Find out more and give today at ImpactClub.com. That's Impact spelled I-M-P-A-C-K-T Club.com. Your support makes a real difference in the lives of our student-athletes. Wolves up.
We welcome you back into the Second to None podcast presented by the Cavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank, where they put you first always. Let's talk hoops. Mm-hmm. Final week of the regular season this past week. And we'll start with the men. We were in Conway, South Carolina on Wednesday at Coastal. Went in there and took care of business. Won that game 71-60. And cool thing about this game was the way we won. It was a night in which the Red Wolves didn't particularly shoot it as well as they normally do. They shot just 39% for the game, but they won it with defense. They held Coastal on their home floor to just 60 points. The Chanticleers shot just 35% for the game. So the defense was fantastic. Also won the rebounding battle in that one, 49-44, and a big night for Isaiah Nelson. He had a double-double with 16 points, 12 rebounds. DeAndre Dominguez also finished in double figures. He had 14 points and 7 boards. The best thing about that night, after we got done, I was off the air, there were still two games going on that we were paying really close attention to. The Cajuns lost and Southern Miss lost. Combined with our win, that meant that the Red Wolves had clinched the number 4 seed in the Sun Belt tournament and a double bye.
Yeah, was interesting. You know, this time 10 days ago, certainly 2 weeks ago, it looked like a really outside path. In fact, you know, person that kind of looks at it and keeps up with it 2 weeks ago said that Prey had maybe a 15% chance to get to the top four. Really because of what all else had to happen. It was because of the stuff beyond our control. And so to have all that happen and happen before you even got to the last day of the regular season was a nice bonus. And it kind of, in some ways, probably could change the way you approach that app game.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of now all of a sudden, you know, to bring in the NBA phrase, you have some load management you can consider on the final night of the season.
I think that's a good phrase to bring into this because, yes, you want to go in and win the game.
And you really wanted to because, right, they made it where you really, really wanted to beat those guys.
Yeah, Appalachian State had the celebration planned. They knew that if they won that game, they were going to drop the streamers. Uh-huh. They had balloons ready. All kinds of things were planned for after the game, trying to clinch a perfect season at home, something they hadn't done since the 60s, something they hadn't done in their entire Division I era. They were trying to win an outright conference championship for the first time in a long time. And they had to win or have James Madison lose to win that outright championship on Friday night. So, yeah, they were fired up for this game. And just like us, went into the game on Friday night on a six-game win streak. So you're taking two of the hotter teams mm-hmm. in the league, the two hottest outside of James Madison. And I even text you at one point, that atmosphere was incredible at App the other night. They seat a little over 8,000. That's their capacity. It was almost at that. I didn't see what they announced, but the student section was completely full. They were into it starting well before tip-off. Yeah, it was a game that meant a whole lot more to Appalachian State than it did the Red Wolves because of what happened on Wednesday yeah. night.
Well, I mean, obviously you want to win because they're keeping score. And playing Spalding would be a lot of fun, but there were bigger fish to fry. Win or lose, you were staying the four seed, so... Anyway, there, like I said, there were things to consider kind of as that game unfolded.
And Caleb Fields has been battling yep. a groin injury for a while now. Why push him when you don't have to? And then he played 14 minutes, but he only played a couple of minutes at the beginning of the second half. And Coach Hodson, understandably, rested him the rest of the game. So he played 14 minutes. Freddie Hicks played 10 minutes. Coach made it clear in our post-game interview that, hey, they're both fine. We're just not going to push them at this point. Because of the double bye, you get 8 days between games, which is fantastic, especially for those two as they get ready for the conference tournament.
So, yeah, tip of the hat to App for doing all the things you just yeah, mentioned.
They
you
deserve know, it. That's a really good team.
Tip my hat to their students because they're pretty much good across the board. We've talked a lot here about their student section in football, so not surprised to hear that it was just as good in basketball. But I'll tell you this. If we were doing all the things you just mentioned, and we were trying to win an outright conference championship, and we were trying to complete a perfect season at home, I believe we'd have 8,000 or more people there.
I would hope so. Yeah, they showed out the other night. Congratulations to App for winning the regular season championship. I will not be surprised at all if we see them again coming up this weekend. We'll talk more about that coming up here in the next little bit. Do want to mention the men had a couple of all-conference honorees. Caleb Fields named to the first team. What a season he had, mm-hmm. leading the conference in assist, one of the national leaders in that category as well. He was fantastic and couldn't be happier for him. Earning all-conference for the first time in his career. He lands on the first team, and then Taron Todd was a third team all-conference selection for the men.
Glad to see both, and I mean, neither's a real big surprise, especially Caleb. I mean, the season he's had running this offense is certainly worthy of being a first-team all-conference pick.
As for the women, they dropped their final two games of the regular season at home this past week. They lost to ULM on Tuesday. Monroe finished that game what on a 10-0 run yeah. and one by nine.
Yeah. So I really, and I'm just going to be real honest here. I didn't go into that game against Monroe liking Arkansas State's chances very much. And this team They competed. Man, they played hard. In talking with the coaches after, it was interesting. They said they thought it was the first time that the rest of that roster finally went out and played with the mindset of, hey, Izzy ain't coming back. Let's go win. They gave themselves a great chance to do that. Unfortunately, they just have too many stretches where they would go a long stretch without a basket. They went at 1.8 minutes of game time without a field goal in this game and then went the last 3 minutes without a bucket. And like I said, we're leading the game going into that. But they competed so well. And I also liked the odds that gave them going into Friday night, that App State game. I thought that competitive level would give them a chance to win. That was a tight ball game that didn't fall their way either. This is the third time in the last four seasons that the women's basketball team has not been able to finish the season with their leading scorer. That leading scorer has gone down for a stretch to end the season.
Oh, wow.
Third time in the last four seasons. Jaira Washington got hurt 2021 year. She got hurt, and they were like, you know, 9-1 at the time. She went down, and they didn't win another game. The next year, Kia Patton had a 30-point half against ULM, and then a couple of games later, tore a knee, didn't finish the season. And I know technically they only went the last three games without Izzy, but they really went the last six. They had three of those six with somebody in Izzy Higginbotham's jersey, but it wasn't Izzy Higginbotham.
It wasn't the fulliest Izzy, for sure.
That's a tough thing. And as we sit here, what I hear is that before they headed to Pensacola on Monday, they were taking one more x-ray of that hand to determine Izzy's status for the conference tournament. So the result of that, as we're sitting here recording this, we do not know.
Congratulations to Izzy, a first-team all-conference selection, certainly. Very deserving of that honor.
And we talked about it last week. I mean, first team all conference. I mean, obviously that's a no-brainer, but we won't have a way to know, but you'll never not make me think that that hand injury did not cost her the Sun Belt Player of the Year award.
Yeah, and you got to look at where you finish in the standings, too. And well, you like look at the big picture, you know, the best player on the best team always is going to be in that conversation. And in this case, with Marshall.
But they would have been, you know, who knows where they're at in the standings, right? I mean, she essentially, six games is a third of the conference schedule that she was either not out there at all or ineffective mostly. So, I mean, that's a third of the schedule, certainly enough to cost you something like winning player of the year. I mean, I get it. I'm not even questioning that, but I think she goes the full 18-game conference schedule playing the way she's playing. Number one, they're not the 10 seed. And number two, she's probably in a position to have a great chance to win that award.
We'll take a look at the conference tournament schedule and tell you what else is happening in the world of A-State athletics this week when we come back right after this.
At First National Bank, our mortgage lending team knows what it takes to make a home and a superior home loan process. Simple, proven, and reliable service with competitive rates at a bank that already feels like home. Since 1889, that's been the First National Bank way, because for our people, this is home. Apply online at fnbank.net/mortgage. From our family to yours, welcome home. First National Bank. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Coach Butch Jones, and we need you to help our A-State athletic programs by donating to the Impact Club. This is an organization that is making a real difference in the lives of our student-athletes. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access that you will not find anywhere else. Find out more and give today at ImpactClub.com. That's Impact, spelled I-M-P-A-C-K-T, club.com. Your support is greatly appreciated and is helping our program right now. Wolves up.
Wrapping things up here on the Second to None podcast presented by First National Bank and by the Cavanaugh Auto Group. You can check out Cavanaugh's entire selection of new and pre-owned vehicles at CavanaughCars.com. The full football schedule is officially out. Season starts August 31st at home against Central Arkansas. We host Tulsa the following week, and then the next 2 weeks will be at Michigan and then Iowa State. We already knew all that. But then the Red Wolves will open up Sun Belt Conference play at home against South Alabama on October 5th. We go from there. Actually, the final two games of the season are at home. One thing that was interesting and certainly well planned is the bye weeks. Yeah. Bye weeks, plural. There's two of them this year as opposed to just one. And where they fall is very advantageous. And I'm sure, you know, anybody that's in this position, they got to be happy about it because there's a bye week after the fourth game of the season, a bye week after game eight.
Yep.
So the schedule is essentially split into thirds, which is very good if you're Butch Jones.
I like that part. I'm with you. I think the early, you know, Labor Day being as early as it is, probably what ever so often it's going to hit where you're going to get two bye weeks in there. And this one did because we're playing not week zero. It just so happens that Labor Day is so early that the Saturday before is still in August. So you got that happening. So I do think that's something to like. Now, there's a couple things. One in particular I don't love about this schedule is that you knew we had the first two at home. Well, the thing you didn't know is we also got the last two at home, the Saturdays before and after Thanksgiving, which means if you come out of that Tulsa game and then into that game the Saturday before Thanksgiving, there are 76 days in between there where we're going to play at home two times in 76 days.
You know, it's interesting how that falls with the first two at home and the last two at home. I can't remember a scenario, and I'm sure we could go back real easily and look, but that's a quirk in the schedule that I can't remember having before.
Yeah. And you know, like, I mean, it stands to reason, right? You're going to be home one of those last two weekends, but it's a little unusual to be home both of them. And like I said, when you had those first two last two, it sure leaves not many home games in the middle. So the 5th, October 5th against South Alabama, and then October 26th, homecoming against Troy.
Indoor track and field. This is a big week because we've got a couple of guys heading to the NCAA Indoor Championships in Boston. One of those is last week's podcast guest, our new friend Colby Eddowes. He'll be competing in the heptathlon in Boston, and Bradley Gelmert, who won every single event he competed in the indoor season, is competing in the pole vault. Also, Sunbelt Conference honors came out here in the last few days. Congratulations to Bradley Gelmert. He's the men's field performer of the year. Michelle Ogbemudia is the women's newcomer of the year, and our man, Dr. Coach Jim Patchell. Coach Dr. Jim Patchell. He sweeps the Coach of the Year honors.
I like Dr. Coach better than Coach Doctor.
21st and 22nd Coach of the Year honors in his career.
How's about we just name the damn award after him? Well, we'll just start saying
that would make sense.
The Dr. Coach Jim Patchell Award.
A total of 20 A-State athletes getting recognized as all-conference. So what a season. And again, when you sweep the indoor championships, you're going to have a lot of individual honors that go along with it. So congratulations again to track and field, and good luck to Colby and Bradley this week. Baseball, they'll be back in action, scheduled to play at Murray State Tuesday at 3, and then they'll be at home this weekend hosting Eastern Illinois in the final non-conference series of the year. Final weekend tune-up before league play begins the following week against the Cajuns. But Eastern Illinois, Friday at 6, Saturday at 3, and then Sunday at 1.
When you do 50 or 60 of them a year, right, it's hard for the post-game interview to sound a whole lot different than the ones before or after it. But I really liked some of what I heard Tommy Raffo say after the Sunday game at Missouri State.
Okay.
In this post-game interview where he, and his thing was like, hey, this team needed this to happen. Like, right, stuff had gone pretty well early, and you played a bunch of home games. They needed to go on the road against a good team and, you know, see what happens when stuff doesn't all go according to plan.
Right.
It needed to happen. It needed to be at Missouri State, a team that you could compare to teams in the Sun Belt. Do you want to win them all? Absolutely. Do they wish to want to? Yeah, but really stuck with me the number of times and the emphasis he put on the fact that this team needed that to happen. And so we'll see kind of what the response is to it going into four more games this week.
Tennis team, real quick, was in Cape Girardeau this past weekend. They defeated Bradley 4-2 on Saturday and then lost to the host team, Southeast Missouri, on Sunday. They're now 5-5 on the season. They'll be beginning conference play coming up this weekend at South Alabama on Saturday. So good luck to Coach Lama and the girls as they make that trip down to Mobile. How about men's golf? They had their first event of the spring this past week. They finished tied for third out of 22 teams at the Lake Las Vegas Intercollegiate. That was in Henderson, Nevada. And
where we were the co-hosts.
That's right. And that included wins over five top 100 teams. They tied another top 100 opponent. And individually, Devin Pappas and Jack Maxey tying for fourth in that event. And Devin, in fact, had the low round of the tournament. He had a 66 on the final day.
Yeah, he played real well on the last day and jumped way up the standings. Yeah, that was against a good field. I hear they stayed the same place we stayed. We went out to that football game against UNLV back
in. Oh, the resort?
Yeah.
That's a nice place. It's way off the strip, though.
Yeah, classic Jerry Scott never went.
I believe that.
To the strip. You know where he went? Hoover Dam. He didn't have time for the damn tour, though. But he did take some damn pictures, he told me.
Did he have some damn bait?
I think he was trying to find out where you got the damn bait.
Women's golf, as we record this, competing at the UNF Collegiate. That's in Jacksonville, Florida. They're coming off a win in their first tournament of the spring, trying to follow that up in a big way. And that leads us into this week in Pensacola, Florida, as the basketball teams get ready to compete in the Sun Belt Conference tournament. The women did receive a first round bye, but they'll be in action coming up against the Cajuns on Wednesday night, 7:30 tip time. You know, that's a team that got them a couple of times this year.
The game here, quite honestly, Arkansas State should have won, led throughout, and just sort of, well, lost by, I think, one at the end, and then took and had a shot at the buzzer for the win. The game there was tied at the half, if you recall, but that is one of the games Izzy played hurt before she got shut down. And tie game at the half, and I think, what was it, a 19-0 run to start the second half.
As far as the men, they'll begin play in the quarterfinal round after getting that double bye. Don't have to play until Saturday at 2 at the Pensacola Bay Center. If everything goes to form in the earlier rounds, then they'd be taking on the 5 seed on Saturday, which is the Cajuns, a team that they lost to both times in the regular season. We did not shoot the ball well in either meeting against the Cajuns, so hopefully the third time's the charm if they do indeed play Bob Marlin's team again. But got to remember, the Cajuns are the defending champs, so a chance to possibly knock them off on Saturday if everything goes according to form.
Yeah, if this thing shook its way out, right, you could get to the Sun Belt Championship by knocking off the Cajuns, App State, and James Madison. We do all those things.
We'll deserve it.
Dang good. Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's and who knows how it'll shake out. I think the tournament's going to be really fascinating. And you're going to have to play somebody good. And you're going to play more than one somebody good along the way. Probably got to play three somebody's good.
Hope to see a lot of fans down there. And for those who are still on the fence about maybe making the trip down to Pensacola, I'll tell you, it's a great setup. They do a great job. The league does. The Pensacola Bay Center is a great place to watch the games. And as far as the team hotel, it's right there on Pensacola Beach. Fantastic place.
It's the Fairfield Inn and Suites. I get that question a lot.
But got a website actually set up.
astateredwolves.com/Pensacola.
If you want to find out more about that, that's a good place to go. But look, we're in the conversation. As well as this team's played, the men winning 8 of the last 10, they certainly have a chance to go down there and make some noise this weekend and can't wait to see what they do.
I mean, yeah, just I saw this morning, right? 8-1 odds to win it. Those aren't real long odds.
Best odds we've had in a while.
Yeah, I'd imagine so.
It's been a fun episode. Appreciate Austin Jazlove coming in. Really enjoyed that visit with him. I appreciate Davey Stinchcomb setting that one up.
The rookie.
Yeah, the rookie doing a good job coming through. If you're not going to Pensacola, check out the Red Wolves this weekend as they host Eastern Illinois.
Had some really, really nice crowds early. Been cool to see that continue.
You know what? Before we wrap it up, do want to mention that crowd against UCA the other night, one of the biggest in school history.
Yeah, only 50 or so off the biggest in school history. So, I mean, on the heels of, you know, the Saturday before, against Lindenwood, where he had a big crowd came down after basketball. So that start had people's attention. Maybe they can crank that momentum back up. That's a good crowd's back this weekend.
People love $2 Tuesday.
Yeah, they do. What's not to love? Got one of those coming up later in the month also.
For Brad, I'm Matt. Have a great week, everybody.